This is the Orange Podcast, conversations with Orange City Council for the local community.
This is Alan Reader, and with more blossoms in the air than you've had hot dinners, you've tuned in for the first Orange Podcast of spring, for a lively dose of fresh ideas found lurking in the corridors of Orange City Council. Coming up today, there's been some coverage of the price of Orange's new sports precinct, growing from $25 million to around $35 million. But when it comes to major infrastructure projects coming in over budget, Orange's mayor believes this one is not Robinson Crusoe.
You know, this is not the only project around New South Wales, around Australia, around the world that since we've had the crazy last few years that projects have gone through the roof with escalation of building materials. We're still getting on with this. We've got $25 million there from the state government to start this project and finish what we can finish. We're staging it. The next step will be major earthworks worth $9 million starting. So you will see a lot of action out there. You will see a lot of heavy machinery to shape fields, to shape the athletics track and to shape the rectangular field.
More from Orange Mayor Jason Hamling coming up soon. Also today, people involved in our local live music scene gathered for an industry forum this week. One of the obstacles to live music that came to light, just how many regulation hoops does a band or venue have to jump through to avoid possible noise complaints?
There's seven agencies that regulate sound and noise in New South Wales. There's seven agencies. So there's duplication in the planning and liquor licensing system. Overlapping regulations are a chronic problem in for the music industry and just for the community. They don't support residents, it doesn't support businesses, it doesn't support a sustainable future. So if we can remove the duplication, communicate where the fun is going to be in responsible and careful ways, then the music that didn't grow, that got the little plants that just got to a point and then got stepped on, will become trees.
More from John Wardell from the Live Music Office later in the show. You're listening to the Orange Podcast. A report going to the next Orange City Council meeting will start to flesh out how the money for the new sports precinct is, where it's going to come from, how much it's going to cost. To find out some more, Orange Mayor Jason Hamling. Jason, are you pleased that the councillors are getting their head around the funding background for this, for the new sports precinct?
Yeah, I am. And as I've said before, this is nothing new. A report went up to council a few months ago regarding grant funding we were chasing, and in there was a $10 million grant that we're chasing federally. So we recognise there will be cost blowouts, but you know, this is not the only project around New South Wales, around Australia, around the world that since we've had the crazy last few years that projects have gone through the roof with escalation of labour, escalation of building materials. We understand, but we're just, a report was asked by one of the councillors, and that's what's going on Tuesday night.
Ask anyone who's trying to build a house in the last little while about supply delays and net costs.
Yeah, and correct. And, you know, we're still getting on with this. We've got $25 million there from the state government to start this project and finish what we can finish. We're staging it.
Okay, so what are the next steps about to happen out at the Brabham site?
The next step will be major earthworks worth $9 million starting. So you will see a lot of action out there. You will see a lot of heavy machinery to shape fields, to shape the athletics track and to shape the rectangular field.
Yep. So in the meantime, who is Orange City Council asking for some more money?
We're talking to the state government. They're heavily involved. We're always talking to them. They know all about it. And as I said before, we've put a federal grant in for $10 million from the federal government.
You're fairly confident this is going to happen?
I'm very confident this will happen because this is not just an Orange project. This is a regional project. And let's talk about the athletics track. There's only a few athletics track west of the mountains that has this sort of tartan track where athletes can train on to go to more elite levels. I think there's one in Dubbo. So we're going to be having people from, say, Cowra or Bathurst coming to Orange for their training at this facility. So they can train on this track and then compete on this sort of surface.
And then when you get to the major rectangular stadium field, 1,500 seats and another room on the grass for another 8,000 people, that's going to be a huge benefit for the whole region.
whole region. And, you know, the question was asked of me, why do we need one when other major towns? Well, why can't we have one? Why should we miss out on trying to attract those sort of sports and, you know, junior competitions? And you've got to remember the media, you know, this was part of a whole stadium conversation back when this was first announced. This is not $25 million for a stadium. This is $25 million for a sporting precinct. So we will be in the position after this is built to able to go and tender for major sporting carnivals, junior carnivals. That's the thing that brings the money into the town, those junior carnivals. And being able to play it all on one place is what they look for. And with this, the extension of Jack Brabham, we will be able to do that.
The cost overrun, it'd be more surprising if the cost hadn't changed since 2018. The Works Council's been going pretty steadily since then, but 2018, when they announced the $25 million, if it still cost $25 million 4 years later, that would be surprising.
Well, in the way that the world is at the moment, you would be asking questions on how did we keep it $25 million 4 years ago to $25 million today. So we're just being upfront. Yes, there are cost blowouts, but we are getting on with the project and we are endeavouring to cover those cost projects with different grant funding and talking to the state, who have been very good at this stage.
And making progress. It looks like by this time next year, there'll be something that looks like 8 new sports fields, whether they'll be ready to play on, but they'll certainly beginning to have grass grown on them and they'll look like 8 new sports fields in Orange.
Exactly. And as I said, it just enhances Orange's position as the you know, number one sporting town west of the mountains. And we've got a, you know, in years gone by, we've had Wade Park, which, you know, cricket, rugby league, there was also all those arguments about seasons going longer, not being able to start here, not being able to start there. And we've been very lucky with Wade Park. You know, we've hosted City Country. We've hosted New South Wales rugby versus Fiji. We had A-League games. But that time has come to an end where, you know, major sporting teams aren't going to bring big million-dollar players out to play on a cricket pitch. They're not going to do that anymore. So cricket will be at Wade Park. That's where the Cricket Centre of Excellence is. It's a great facility. And, you know, we hope to bring bigger cricket games out to Orange, like a Sheffield Shield or something like that, a women's Big Bash trial game. We're constantly in conversations about bringing those games out. But once we bring this, you know, the sporting precinct with the dedicated rectangular field, we'll be talking to the NRL, we'll be talking to the Rugby Union, we'll be talking to the A-League. And, you know, it's all about being able to bring those games west of the mountain so we don't have to travel down to Sydney to see those games.
You're obviously passionate about sport. Well, you're pleased this week to hear that Council was also involved in trying to give a leg up, a fresh start for our local music industry.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm very passionate about sport because this project's been number one on my list since I've been on Council. And, you know, I'm happy to see it gone from the bottom of the pile to where it is now. But it's not all about Orange being sport. It's about cultural diversity, and that's, you know, music. We've had some musicians in talking about the local music scene, and, you know, it's very positive as a community what, you know, diverse things that we do have.
We'll find out some more about the Orange music industry in the next half of the Orange podcast. Jason Habling, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Alan.
You're listening to the Orange podcast. During the week, Orange City Council and the Live Music Office have hosted a community forum to try and see where we can go with our local music industry. We've got music venues and performers together. And to find out some more from Live Music, Lucy Joseph. Lucy, what was the forum about for you?
The forum that we had last night was part of the Live and Local program that we are working with Orange Council to deliver at the moment. It's funded by the Australian Council of the Arts. The forum really kicked off a conversation between the community and council as to what a thriving live music scene might look like for Orange, what are our strengths, what are the gaps, what are the challenges that we need to address, and most importantly, what are the practical solutions and initiatives that can be developed and put in place, either led by the community or led by the council or both, to solve those challenges and to leverage the strengths that we identified to achieve a thriving live music scene. Mm. That's the conversation that we had last night. And it's an ongoing conversation with council through the program.
To bring all those that multifaceted thing together, you needed both venues and performers and other people who work around the fringe. Were they there last night?
Yeah, all sorts of people. The more diverse range of local stakeholders that we have in the room, the better. The music industry is made up of a whole different bunch of sectors and has an impact on related industries. So to have not just musicians and venues in the room, but people representing hospitality, food and wine industries, events, festivals, even just to have audience members of the public come and talk about, as an audience member, what do they want to see in terms of live music in their local community. So, so to have everybody in the room is a really great thing.
Big picture, is the music industry in the Central West in good shape?
Look, after COVID, there's a lot of recovery that has to happen across the board, not just the Central West.
And that's what these venues, these forums are about.
Exactly, yeah. Look, it's a huge road to recovery, particularly after the last 2 years, but also even before COVID, there have been roadblocks and hurdles, particularly around regulatory matters that have had an impact on the live music industry for a number of decades now. But yes, certainly... after the last 2 years, there's a lot of recovery that needs to happen. But the Central West is a really special place that has really great communities that are connected to each other, a lot of collaboration going on, a lot of investment, coming into the region. So we're excited to see more activity happening with live music. There's already a lot of good stuff going on. A good foundation to build on.
And I gather some fit data that came up at last night was suggesting, in terms of numbers of venues, Orange particularly, there are lots of locations and places where people do want to have a band to perform.
Yeah, that's right. Our very good friend Pat Coomey has been doing a lot of census work, and the numbers that we were provided last night suggested that Orange has is really up there with the most amount of venues in the Central West, which is really exciting. That's a great outcome.
And then the next step is putting venues who are looking for a performer in touch with people who want to perform.
Yeah, that's right. That's in the Live and Local program. What we're trying to do is establish and continue really positive working relationships between local businesses and local musicians. Anyone can put on a micro festival event. That's the type of activation that we do in the program, and we want communities to recognise that anyone can organise local musicians to perform within local businesses. It all comes down to the relationship that's built between those two stakeholders. So we really encourage venues, musicians alike, if you're looking for more gigs, often it's as simple as just putting them on yourself. And the micro festival model that is included in this program is a great way to do that.
Some skills workshops coming up in the coming weeks that are really going to help people who want to do that learn some of the basics.
Yeah, that's right. Part of the program is a professional development offering, whether it's workshops or a panel session. They are run by industry professionals who are there to provide advice, guidance, basically to provide industry standard information to musicians and venues on how to be better in their practice. So they're part of the program. They're coming up in the second week of September. We couldn't do that without the services of Music New South Wales, who are programming those events. Music New South Wales is the peak music body for contemporary music in New South Wales, and they provide professional development sessions, workshops, information, all sorts of things all the time. So for musicians and venues alike, it's really important to know that that there's organisations like that around to help them.
If you're interested in finding out some more about those skills workshop, details on the Orange City Council website. Lucy Joseph, thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
You're listening to the Orange Podcast. We've just heard about the Live and Local Forum. When a band starts playing in the local area, it makes noise. Do the locals like that? Certainly the musicians and the audiences do, but how is the community to be sought through some of that? One of the presenters and people giving some information to the Live and Local Forum during the week is John Wardle from the Australian Live Music Office. John, how does the package of regulations around noise help us work through that as a community?
Look, I think you've framed the question in a really interesting way, because one of the changes in the Liquor Act that we spearheaded for the music industry in 2020 is that sound and noise are now interchangeable in the regulation. When we talk about live music and performance and fun and vibrancy, some of it's sound, some people might think it's noise. So we're trying to get the regulations now provide for a space where we can think differently about this. And I'll put it this way, if you've set up a music venue or you want to present some music and you've invested in acoustic reports, you've bought a PA, you've isolated various speakers, and you've done all lots of due diligence around presenting the music, and then you know somebody might not like it, you might be brought into a noise complaints process. But really, it's about sound. And one of the key sort of motivations for the program that we work with other councils in Orange at the moment is to encourage the music industry to understand about the presentation of music, how to present it well, how to be appropriate, all the metrics that are involved in putting on a great gig, of which ensuring that it doesn't disturb the quiet and good order of the neighbourhood is one. Mm-hmm. But then also working with councils as well, so they better understand how regulations can better support presentation of live music, and also the night economy and land use. We've had some great meetings with council last night and also through this morning, where we've really debated lots of the new regulations that are available, and also how existing laws can be applied as well. It's been very interesting, and I think we've learned a lot, and council have as well.
Yeah, that's part of introducing a new system that we work out as a community and with government, how best to do that. So if I'm, say, a developer and I'm building a new industrial thing and there's going to be jackhammering, as part of getting planning approval for that, I'll have to get people to measure the sound of my jackhammer and work out the impact, and that gets part of the approval process. Are you suggesting that if I'm a venue, a pub, and I want to have music more often, that's the sort of work I'll have to do in order to help the community and the approval planning authorities give their consent?
I think for the planning scheme, the planning system in New South Wales provides for entertainment already in pubs, clubs, okay, restaurants and bars and cafes. So licensed premises don't need a separate approval to have entertainment. There is a process where if there's an issue with sound and noise, then a condition could be applied on a liquor licence, so that then subsequently down the track, if there's a problem, then that would be a breach. But there's not a default prohibition as such, as you're thinking. Mm. But if people are, if you want to go for a change of use for a building or set up a primary purpose venue for the first time, that's not a hospitality industry business, then you would be expected to do some acoustic work.
It sounds like the new regulations are trying to draw a distinction between unpleasant noise from a jackhammer and something more melodic from a band. Is that too simple?
I think the way I'd frame it would be that there's new regulations that provide for better setting the ground rules around land use. Mm. And that there's, you'd expect in an industrial area to have sound and noise, but so, well, you would in a nighttime economy area, an evening economy area, where you've got entertainment venues, you've got food and drink premises, people are out there outside of office hours into the evening and into the night. And I think just setting the ground rules in a clearer way that addresses problems in regulations in New South Wales. One of them is that there's seven agencies that regulate sound and noise in New South Wales. There's seven agencies. So there's duplication in the planning and liquor licensing system. Overlapping regulations are a chronic problem for the music industry and just for the community. They don't support residents, it doesn't support businesses, it doesn't support a sustainable future. So setting the ground rules, providing incentives for venues, and also ensuring that other development is guided appropriately, then that's all part of what the new regulations are working towards.
Sounds like we've got a way still to sort out the details, but big picture, if it works well as you're hoping, if it works as well as you're hoping it will, it might be more likely I'll hear some music in my local pub.
I think it's not just the new laws. There are some existing processes that can be applied as well. And so, look, we've lost venues, we've lost work opportunities because of the overlapping regulations and because the expectations about what sort of activity might happen in night economy areas haven't been clearly communicated. Mm. So if we can remove the duplication, communicate where the fun is going to be in responsible and careful ways, then the music that didn't grow, that got the little plants that just got to a point and then got stepped on, will become trees.
Mm. John Wardell, it sounds like a great future. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
And that's the Orange Podcast for this week. Remember, you can download this program anytime from the Orange City Council website, or better, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The Orange Podcast is produced on Wiradjuri Country. Until next time, this is Alan Reader. Bye for now.